Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and
Welcome to another edition of Fast Radio. I am Ryan, your host, flying solo tonight, apparently. We have a very, very special guest tonight. We have April Mooneyham from Cross Creek's Paranormal down in Newport News, Virginia, I think. She's going to be coming on the show to talk about her experiences and, you know, stuff like that, her group, and so it should be a interesting conversation, I hope. Oh, I know it's going to be an interesting conversation. Hope everyone had a good week. I hope everyone had a good Cinco de Mayo. You know, if you're at home drinking, doing a few shots of tequila, or maybe in the restaurant, eating some salsa, dying some tacos or whatever. I'm glad you took the opportunity to call in and listen to the show. So, I had a pretty good weekend. Yeah, I did some laundry and I actually went for like a 4-mile walk on Sunday. It was really, really pretty. Really pretty day to go out for a walk yesterday. It's a, it's one of those things where I walked like 2 miles and I realized, hey, I got to turn my ass around and walk back. So that the walk back wasn't that bad. The walk there, I wasn't sure how far I had to go, so I'm just keep walking. And then, so I got there, got to where I wanted to be. I was like, oh, it's not bad. So I walked back. I knew exactly how far it was, so the walk back wasn't too bad. So that was fun. Wow, so I did laundry on Saturday. And, watch TV, the laundry on Saturday. Nothing too special. And Saturday night, I went out to a campfire. That was fun. Going out there and hanging out by the bonfire, just kind of telling stories and hang out with family and stuff. And actually had a hot dog roasted over a bonfire for the first time. Never had that before. I've always had marshmallows and stuff. But, it was nice being able to, talk to family and actually, just relax and be outside for once, not be so fucking cold. It was cold outside on Saturday night. So I'm glad I had the fire going and everything. They had a fire going. It was a nice night. Friday night was slow. Too much Friday night. Today was just, I don't know, it was a little bit of a Monday. Stressful. Well, but it's what it is, man. You gotta deal with it. You gotta roll on, you know? So, I was looking out, I was on the internet, messing around, and I went to a paranormal news website. I'm like, okay, well, let me check this out. So I checked it out, and I found the top 10 signs that your house is haunted. So, in case you're wondering, if you have any doubts or any questions about whether or not your house is haunted, I will tell you the top 10 signs to find out if your house is haunted or not. Number 10, strange smells. One useful sign your place can be haunted is strange smells you shouldn't sense. These scents can be abrupt and come from nowhere. A spirit may sometimes bring with it scents it was once familiar with or had, such as cigar smoke or fresh flowers. Knowing whether or not the smells are coming from the house or from the spirit itself is one way of determining if your house has other inhabitants you may not know about. That's a good one. Odd dreams of people or places you don't know. This is number 9. If a spirit resides in the house, sometimes they can cause you to dream or even have nightmares about them. You may dream of strange places you've never heard of, you've never been to, or people you can't recognize. It could be a sign that either they're trying to explain their story or make contact with you. Uh-oh. All right. I think I have my guests calling in right now. So I'm about to continue the exciting top 10 list of your house is being haunted thing. Let me get her on the line. There we go. Is this April?
Yes, it is.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just fine. You having a good Cinco de Mayo?
Oh, you know it. Spent half the day sleeping.
You don't have the. You're not doing shots of tequila and eating lots of salsa and shit.
Oh, I wish. No, I'm working nights these days, so my party time of sitting around watching paranormal shows, which I mean, it's pretty enjoyable, but you know.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That keeps you out of trouble.
Yeah,
for sure. So, how was your day?
It was good. Again, I just kind of tried to sleep as much as possible, but you know, life sometimes interrupts that. So, got up, got some things accomplished. You know, had a little bit of Cinco de Mayo fun. Got some Starbucks in me, and now I'm talking to you.
I'm glad I could be a good way to end your day.
Yeah, definitely. I think my co-founder is going to call in as well. She said she was going to join us, so she should be calling in any minute.
Is she NATO phone number?
She is.
I think she might be on the line here. Is it 47? I'm going to put her on. Hopefully it's the right person. So.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, it is me. It's Carrie.
Oh, hey, Carrie. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. We're just sitting up here talking about Cinco de Mayo and paranormal shows and stuff.
You're the
co-founder of Cross Creek's Paranormal?
Yes, I am.
All right. Cool. So how did you come up with the name Cross Creek's Paranormal?
Well, this is April, by the way. It was actually
okay.
When I was 17, my dad died, and right after he died, we went back to my grandparents' house, and I was laying in bed, and I got woke up like 3 o'clock in the morning. And something told me to go out and kind of sit in the living room and just kind of collect my thoughts. I mean, I was pretty shocked, you know, being 17 and losing my dad, really unexpectedly.
It's quite a blow.
Yeah. So I was out sitting alone on my grandparents' couch, you know, just kind of processing, and my dad came in. You know, I know that sounds weird to people that aren't really, you know, involved with the paranormal or, you know, even people that are. I had a visitation, so to speak. And he was saying to me with a lot of emphasis, you know, he was using his hands. He kept saying Crossed Creeks over and over again. And he was saying it like it was something that I was supposed to know. But to this day, I mean, I'm 30 now, so I have no idea what that means. And that's kind of where the journey began for me, trying to figure out not only possibly what Crossed Creeks means, but also, you know, my father, you know, what happened to my dad after that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. I mean, that you come back to you and say, you know, Cross Creeks. I was looking up Cross Creeks Paranormal online to see if there's any websites or anything. But, I mean, for you guys, but Cross Creeks, that's there's nowhere near where you live that was like a Cross Creeks, like a, I don't know, like a road or something, or a neighborhood, or
I looked,
a shopping mall
I looked,
or something.
I looked for years. I ended up moving. I grew up in Blackstone, Virginia. Ended up moving to Richmond. And I found everything that I could that was named Cross Creek. There was a nursery, like a plant nursery there. I went and bought plants from there, you know, like every freaking spring I would go buy a new plant just so that I, you know, could go to Cross Creek's nursery and maybe find the answer. I ended up moving into Cross Creek's apartments, even though it may have been more of the more seedy neighborhoods, because I thought, you know, maybe this is where I'm meant to be. Recently, I did have a little bit of a breakthrough. My dad was Seminole Indian, and he actually came from Keystone Heights, Florida. And I did a search for Creek, Google, and I actually came up with a Cross Creek, Florida, that is associated with the Seminole reservation that they have there. So maybe I'm meant to go there. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like once you get there, you're like, well, then now what do I do? I mean, because it's like...
Exactly. Maybe I don't want to know. Maybe he's to stay away. I don't know. He was saying it so emphatically, though, that I have to believe that there's something there that I'm either supposed to find or that he wants to keep me away from. But, I mean,
keep away from it, he probably would be like, don't go to Cross Creeks. Don't go to Cross Creeks. Don't go to Cross Creeks. Maybe he won, like, the lottery or something and tell you.
Yeah,
have,
maybe.
Like,
I mean,
buried treasure down there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I'm meant to go down there and, like, ancestors be like, oh, you're secretly an Indian princess. Here's your dowry.
Yes. Yes, of course, you know, I don't know what, you know, the Indians would give you. So, I mean, so what got you guys into the paranormal field?
What got us interested? Well, that obviously got me interested. At a pretty young age, but Carrie and I were both really into it from the beginning. We got to be friends in, what was it, fifth grade?
Yeah.
We were friends in fifth grade, and, you know, we used to be really voracious readers. We would go to the library all the time, and all the books that we would get would kind of be associated with the paranormal or all sorts of stuff, and we just kind of read as much as possible in it. And then, you know, also... Carrie grew up in a house that was extremely old. How old was it, Carrie?
It was built in 1903. It was a parsonage for the Baptist church that was behind it.
Wow.
And it was
so
super haunted. Like, there was always stuff happening. There were always, you know, like, little things that would happen. And we just kind of, you know, obviously grew up in it and got used to it and was very interested in it that way. So that's kind of how this whole thing started.
Did any of that stuff scare you when you were younger? Did it frighten you at all? It's more like, it's really cool.
Well, I always kind of felt like there were two different things going on. There was a woman, the spirit of a woman that people would see standing at the top of the stairs. Sometimes she would smell flowers. We sort of thought that it was a former resident that gave piano lessons in the house, and her piano is still, to this day, my dad still lives in that house, her piano is still there, so that wasn't very, you know, concerning. It was more comforting, and, you know, some of the people that saw her would get a little startled, but it wasn't threatening feeling. But a few times when I was there by myself, I kind of would feel a little like somebody was watching me, kind of creeped out. But nothing really scary ever happened.
It's always worse when you're by yourself, when you get that feeling, that creeped out feeling that someone's behind you or someone's looking, like, just around the corner.
Yes.
It's always, like, worse when you're by yourself. Did you see anything, any like, apparitions or anything when you were in the house?
I didn't see anything growing up there. The house had been added on to several times over the years, and my bedroom was in the newer part of the house. But my mom saw her at the top of the stairs, and then my boyfriend in high school lived with us, and his bedroom was upstairs, and apparently one night he saw her because my mom came out of her room and said he was sitting on his bed with every light upstairs on, and she said she just kind of chuckled and said, oh, you saw her, did you? And I guess that was that.
I can't say I blame him for that. You know, I'd probably do the same damn thing if I saw that. If I was in high school and I saw that, probably the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, so that's that's pretty cool. Did you guys, so, would you guys basically just, you know, hear stuff and that's kind of stuff? Like, in the house, were we just hearing things and smelling stuff? Or did you experience anything in there?
Well, for me, it was more just hearing things, or, like I said, maybe you would smell flowers sometimes, or just feeling like somebody was watching you.
Okay. I gotcha. So, you guys, so when did you start your group?
Cross Creases started in September 2012 after Carrie purchased it was like a ghost seminar kind of thing at a Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm.
At County Jail, and it was like an EVP seminar specifically, and we had both, you know, like I said, always been interested in the paranormal, and we
mm-hmm.
went to the seminar, and ended up learning a lot about EVPs and all the equipment, doing a little mini investigation in the jail. It was fantastic. It was probably the best birthday gift ever, I think, for both of us.
Yeah.
That very excited, you know what, we could definitely do this. Like, this is completely plausible for both of us, looking at both all the equipment that they had and everything, you know, all the experiences that we did have that night. Like, there's no way that we could just step away from that and, you know, just say, oh, okay, it was a one-time deal. So we decided
yeah.
that we wanted to do outreach and kind of help people and try and reach out to some of the other communities here and some of the other paranormal groups here in Hampton Roads and also in Richmond, and try and figure out if we had a viable group on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out that we did, and that was thanks to RTL Paranormal, Ray Savino. He was he's like a big brother to me. I mean, he's instrumental in our group. He's helped us out quite a bit over the last 2 years.
Oh yeah, it's true. Once you catch the bug, once you open the door, you know, what's out there, you know, you can't just walk away from it. You know, so I know exactly
yeah,
what you're talking about.
Thankfully, the community, you know, the paranormal community has really just embraced us and helped us out quite a bit. Like, I mean, we were at Paracon together, you and I, and kind of talking, mm-hmm. and ended up meeting some of the girls from the Sisters of Salem and
oh, yeah.
Misty and Ashley. And they're fantastic people. Ended up kind of hooking up with them a little bit and have been talking to them since a little bit. And ended up meeting Scott Connor from Seven Cities Paranormal and Tim Hoover, of course, and Lyle from Twisted. The whole community, honestly, I've asked Lyle questions, and he's come right back and said, you know, like, okay, well, this is what you need to do. You know, these are the kinds of things that I would recommend. Also, Tim has been instrumental. Like, he's offered a million times to help me with EVP stuff. He knows that that's my weakness right now. So just the whole community has kind of come together and embraced us as a new group, and that's fantastic. You don't
that's
get that everywhere.
No, no, no. I mean, it should be all about sharing evidence because, you know, we're basically out there for the same reason. We're not
right.
competing with each other. You know, we're
right, well, most
together
of us.
To
I mean,
find
I would...
the truth.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah,
definitely. I'm glad you had fun at Paracon.
Yeah, it was good. I wish I had stayed longer, but, you know, I had my daughter with me, and that was an exercise in futility, trying to keep her occupied.
Yeah, it's always hard to keep kids occupied. When you're doing something like that, they're always, you know, all over the place. Because I have a little daughter myself, which she's 10 now. But I know. Hang on. I got my other co-host on the other line. Let me get her on.
Sweet.
Amber. Hello? She's on. Oh, she'll talk when she's ready. So you started your group, and is this just you two in the group, or do you have more people in there?
Nope, we actually have 10 total. We have what we call 5 core members. And basically what Cross Creeks kind of does is anytime we have an investigation, it's almost always going to be an open investigation. So it's pretty much open to the public. If you chat us on our Facebook page or you hook up with us on Twitter or whatever, you send us an email at our Gmail account and you say, hey, you know, I'm really interested in the paranormal. I really don't know how to get into it, though. then that next investigation that we have, we'll send you guys, we'll send whoever an invite and be like, hey, you know, we heard you're interested. Here's the time and the location, all this stuff. Here's what to do. Here's what not to do. Here's what to bring, the whole nine. Because we're all about trying to kind of do outreach. If somebody's really interested in it, we don't want them to be turned away because, you know, they may not belong to a group or to feel kind of like intimidated by the whole thing. So we try and make it as fun as possible. That's kind of what we're all about. So those 10 members are people that we have recurring that come with us pretty much regularly. And then the 5 core members are basically like what I would call our governing body, so to speak. They're the members that actually not only put in money but also are consistently there, come to meetings, drive hours and hours and hours to go do client interviews and attend events and stuff like that. So we've kind of broken it down that way. It seems easiest.
So is it mostly spread out between Richmond and Newport News or the Hampton Roads area or with your
I would say
group?
Pretty spread. We've done investigations all the way out to Radford, Virginia, and we've done, obviously, investigations in Virginia Beach. So we've gone from one end of the state to the other. We've also done investigations in Blackstone, Virginia, which is like 45 minutes north of the North Carolina border. And then we've, you know, we're willing to go all the way up to Occoquan, but we haven't really had to do that yet. So pretty much all over the place. We try and specialize in the Hampton Roads, Richmond area and kind of try and stick around local, but we'll travel for good stuff. So,
what are some of the places that you want to check out that you've never been to before?
Well, we do have 2 pending investigations that are coming up that we're super excited about. One is Schwartz's Tavern and Blackstone Armory. That's in Blackstone, Virginia, where Carrie and I are from, where we grew up. And then there's also St. Julian's Creek Annex, which is a military base. It's a Navy base here in Hampton Roads. We're kind of in talks right now with the commander of the base and hoping that he will let us have access. You know how it can be a little squirrely sometimes trying to get access to military bases.
Oh, yeah.
But hoping to get both of those, I think if I had to pick, like, a crazy, you know, best-case scenario, it would definitely be that large hotel in Virginia Beach. What is that? Carrie, you know.
The Cavalier.
The Cavalier, yeah. I mean, if I had to, like, pick something and be like, yep, that's the one, it would be that.
Did you go there when they opened it up to the public for the auction? Did you go check it out?
No, I didn't. I wish I had. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, no. They had, I think, like 1,000 people lined up outside when they opened the doors. So, I mean, I thought about going down there myself, but once I saw that, the line of people they had going in there, I was like, no. Because they're getting rid of all the furniture or something, so they're auctioning it off pretty much. They'll go there. I mean, I don't even think it was an auction. Go there and buy people a ticket. You know, buy like a coat hanger from the Cavalier Hotel. You know, I thought it would be cool to go there and the corner try to pick something up, but there would have been too many people there anyway, so.
Definitely. Also, like Portsmouth Naval Medical Facility, like that place is crazy super haunted. And I mean, I'm just saying that based off of my experiences. My daughter was there for about 2 weeks right after she was born, and I used to go in, you know, in the middle of the night, and I was there all day long, and she was in the old section, so I would have to walk up these winding, you know, like narrow, blacked-out stairs and stuff like that, and it was just, you could tell, like, there was a definite energy there. I mean, you know, there would almost have to be. It's a hospital, so I would love to do that, but they don't allow any investigations. So one day maybe.
Is it still open?
Is it
a working hospital?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, they have, like, a section that they have kind of closed off that they were thinking about renovating. I'm not sure if they are anymore, but they were thinking about renovating it, and it was a section that dated back to, like, pre-World War II era. So we'll see what they do with that.
You think, you know, make some extra money.
Definitely.
They don't even worry about renovating it. Just rent out to people, to investigators. You want to come and do some investigating. But, you know, then again, you know, you might get the wrong kind of people. offensive because a lot of people don't take what we do seriously. So
right,
there are,
definitely.
There are bad apples, you know. So who
right.
are some of your influences when it comes to the paranormal? I mean, as far as, like, how you do your investigations, and, you know, who influenced you to start your group and everything?
Well, I think I would definitely say that RTL had the biggest hand in our investigation style because, you know, they took us under their wing. We did a lot of investigations with them, and so they basically showed us a lot of their methods, and we've been using those since, and, you know, because they're good, they're tried and true. But we basically, Carrie is the co-founder, but she's also the historical researcher. Like, she is the best case manager you could ever hope for. She, you know, has access to pretty much any resource. So we try and approach it from a historical point of view, doing the review for it, and try and give whoever the client is, you know, whether it be, for instance, St. Albans, or whether it be a private client, give them the full history of the land, the house, everything, the complete property, you know, give them a really good view. And then in the context of that historical information and all that research that we do have the scientific piece where we take out, you know, the full spectrum camera and the SB7 spirit box and the millimeter and, you know, we bring our fluke in and make sure that the electricity levels are good in the whole area. And so we try and do that portion of it. So it's kind of serving two masters. You know, you have the scientific portion where, you know, you're doing those EVP sessions and trying to make them as clean and as clear as possible and trying to make the evidence, you know, line up with whether there is or there isn't, you know, trying to figure out that puzzle. And then you also have that historical piece that can lend itself to that. So we try our best to blend the worlds.
Well, that's good. That's a good way to go about it.
Yeah, we figure, you know, if somebody is giving us full access to their home or full access to their historical property or something like that, then they should definitely get something awesome out of the deal. And we've had some really cool properties, one of which was Oak Ridge Plantation in Blackstone, Virginia. It was built in the 1800s, and it's on the National Registry of Historic Sites. It's awesome. Beautiful, beautiful property. But, you know, they're letting us come into their home and basically traipse around for hours at a time, you know, talking to the air. They're kind of kicked out of their own home for that time period. So we should be able to give them at least that historical information, that historical background that, you know, to me is worth it, you know, a couple of hours or a few hours here or there and this amazing write-up. So that's kind of our
hopefully
exchange.
Hopefully you tell them something that they don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
A little tidbit of information that they weren't aware of. So,
in the case of Oak Ridge, maybe you find something that they might not have spotted before on the property.
Yeah, definitely. And we actually, Carrie did a really great job with the research on Oak Ridge, and we actually did find a couple things, or at least we think we found a couple things that they weren't 100% sure of. We did find, what was it, like the kitchen or the slaves' quarters or something like that, and it was buried in this area of woods, and we basically blazed a trail through it and were able to find little indications of maybe a foundation or something like that. So we were able to give them a little bit more information. They also had a couple letters about, you know, there was actually a famous ghost story that occurred at Oak Ridge Plantation, and we were able to give them some supporting information around that was actual historical fact. So they were really pleased with that.
Wow. Sounds like you guys really did your homework on it. So Oak Ridge Plantation, is that
Yeah, so it was built, I believe, 1810, and the builder actually was from Hanover County, and his son was a delegate for the state of Virginia, fought in the Civil War. After the war, he moved back into the home, but the ghost story is attached to the builder.
So the people at Oak Ridge, did they call you or did you contact them? When they were like, oh, my God.
We actually contacted them.
Or have there been investigations there before?
No, there had not been an investigation there before. We contacted them. I'm a total history geek, so I just love old buildings, just all kinds of anything. I'm all about it. And I was just looking at places on the National Historic Landmark Registry and came across that and just saw an old book, Margaret Lee, Ghost of Virginia, that there was a ghost story attached to it, and so reached out to the owners and asked, you know, hey, we'd like to come out and, you know, see if we can find anything. And the owners were really great. They were very knowledgeable about some of the history of the place, and they'd done a beautiful job restoring it.
That's what you got to do. That's awesome. You reach out there, and you got a case. That's pretty cool. So have you been there and you've done it, or is that still going to happen? Is it yet to happen?
No, we've...
Have you actually...
And we've done it once. We went in for an initial client interview, interviewed for, I don't know, it was forever. It was like 4 hours. But, I mean, the clients were so awesome that they, you know, we basically moved in for about 4 hours. And Carrie and I were sitting there walking all over the property with them and walking all over the house and playing with their animals and stuff like that. And then we actually came out later on this past summer and did an actual investigation there for, I'd say, between 6 and 8 hours. And we haven't really, we've sent them what we had, but we haven't really corresponded with them since. But I hope to be able to go back out there this summer. We did kind of talk to them about coming back out again, and they said they would be welcome to have us. So,
what kind of stuff were you able to pick up at the house?
We actually did pick up a little bit. We picked up a couple EVPs, mostly in the kitchen area of the house.
Okay.
We also, like I said, we were able to find a slave graveyard, and we were also able to find the foundation of that building. So other than the EVPs, we didn't get a whole lot of information. We didn't get a whole lot of, like, paranormal evidence. But I think being that that was the very first paranormal investigation on that property, and being that, you know, I think that's going to be one of those cases where the more exposure that we have to that area, I think the more results we'll have. I think, you know, I do think that the paranormal, you know, whatever's there, spirits, if you will, do tend to get a little bit more comfortable with people over time. And so, you know, the owners had experienced things. We weren't able to necessarily duplicate those results, but I think that if we went in a couple more times, we might be able to actually get something.
I agree with you completely. We went on an investigation at this plantation in Powhatan, and we got a few EVPs the first time. Nothing super special. We went back a few months later. We got more EVPs, and we went back in February, and we just got off the chart EVPs and pretty convincing evidence. You know, other than EVPs too. So I think the longer, the more we came and showed ourselves, and well, they recognized us, the more they came out, they were more comfortable and more talkative with us.
Right. It's so, just like meeting a person.
Completely.
Meeting a person for the first time, you might be nervous, you might be a little bit closed off because you don't really know what to expect, but the more interaction that you have with that person, the more open you're going to be to them. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's... If you go to someone's... That's like, exactly. If you go to someone's house and they don't know you and you start talking to them, you know, like, who the hell are you? I'm not talking to you. Just get out of my house.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you show respect and stuff and come back and just keep on showing respect, so get more comfortable with you. So what? What kind of EVPs did you guys get at this place, at the Oak Ridge Plantation? Were there, like, people talking, or?
Yeah, it was a woman. It was really high pitched, and we actually heard it at the time with our, you know, with just our ears. So we didn't really know at the time that it was paranormal. We kind of assumed that it was either one of the animals or something like that. But we were able to kind of piece together based on the actual tapes, the recordings, you know, like where everybody was in the room, and then everybody's reaction kind of differently to what was happening, to what we were hearing. So you would hear, you know, like you heard the EVP, and then you heard the person that was sitting right beside the recorder go, "What was that?" And then you heard somebody else that was like in another room with their recorder go, "Did somebody hear a high-pitched, you know, like wail?" And then it, like everybody was kind of reacting at the same time. We knew where the owners were, and it couldn't have been. To me, it can't be an animal. It sounded like a really high-pitched wail almost.
So
was the whale, was it like in the distance, like I got another room, like way down outside the house? Or was it, did it sound like it was close by?
Like from where I was sitting and from where my recorder was, it sounded like it was right outside the kitchen, but the kitchen is raised. Like it's, you have to walk up steps to get to the kitchen. So it would have had to have been, you know, like well above the ground for it to be something that was outside. So I don't think that it was something outside, but, you know, can't necessarily debunk that completely. Although I don't think there are any animals. I pitched women's, you know, whales other than cougars, and we don't have those, so.
Yeah, I understand that. I was at Henricus, the settlement.
Chesterfield, and I was out on the docks and heard something that did not sound like any animal that I never heard before, but I was, you know, in the woods, basically, so I don't know what every animal sounds like, so I had to throw it out, because it could have been a bird or something I never heard before.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, but did it sound like someone's crying, or was it just like a woman screaming?
I wouldn't say screaming. It was probably between a cry and a scream. Like, it was honestly like, you know, like somebody who had maybe suffered some loss or something and just kind of was letting out like a wail, kind of a moan kind of thing, but it was high-pitched. So not really too sure what that is. But that would be something that, you know, if we go back and we get, you know, similar results or we get something completely different, that might be something that we could build on for an actual case.
Well, you'd always ask the people who live there, right, for them, and say, "Hey, have you ever heard this before outside on your property?" And they say no. That would help indicate that it wasn't a bird or
right.
a wild animal on the property. So I probably guarantee that the first, if it was an animal, probably the first time it's made that noise.
Right.
So, I mean, but you sent them the EVP. Did they say anything?
No, not really. We actually didn't get any response from them, but we sent them. We actually have a SoundCloud, so we've been sending out all of our EVPs and things via our SoundCloud.
Okay. So what other EVPs did you get?
They're really nothing there necessarily. Like I said, it was kind of a noxious, you know, night. It was just, I think all of us were getting to know the location, and the location was getting to know us, so to speak.
Okay. So, what other places have you been to?
Well, we went to we've basically had 13 investigations since we began in September 2012. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the core members kind of work full time, so we try and get one in when we can. And you know, sometimes it's not every month, but we try and do something every month, whether it be a meeting or, you know, like a little Facebook meeting or something like that. But, you know, we try. We've done the Boxwood Inn. Obviously, we did a little bit of an event there in conjunction with RTL. I went and helped them out in November 2013. They had kind of an open house. So that was fantastic. We had the Oak Ridge Plantation. We did Ferry House twice. That's in Virginia Beach. That was fantastic both times. We didn't get a whole lot of results with that one the very first time we went. Not really any EVPs or anything like that. I mean, we would get, you know, little atmospheric stuff, but nothing that we could say, you know, definitively, this is out of the norm, this is weird. But the last time we went, we there was a set of marbles. It was one of the marbles had I don't know, gone away from that set and found its way on the staircase. And everyone swore up and down that, you know, that wasn't, nobody touched them. So that was a little interesting. That was an open event,
yeah.
Though. We had, I would say we had between 10 and 15 people that were just in the public that came out to that event. We did EVP sessions and stuff. So, you know, I really didn't have, really high hopes for us to get a whole lot of evidence. There were a lot of people in that house, especially for the size. Just kind of wanted to get everyone acclimated and see. We were also doing a little bit of a membership drive then, so we wanted to see if there was anyone who would be interested in joining.
Uh-huh. It's always hard to get evidence when you go on those public events because there's so many people.
Yeah.
Plus the people kind of contaminate the evidence too.
Right.
By accident.
Yeah, they don't know, you know,
they're
like...
trying to.
Right, they don't know the etiquette for VPs and stuff like that. They don't know not to wear perfume. You know, they don't know the little stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's hard to keep people whispering and stuff when you're on those events too.
Yeah, giggling to each other because they're scared, you know.
Yeah,
we get that.
Exactly.
We did one of the best investigation we've had so far, I think. I mean, Carrie can, you know, give her own opinion here, but my favorite has been St. Albans. Sanatorium.
Yeah, tell me about that one. I was just there, and definitely
I saw that.
I was
so jealous. We're
I would definitely agree.
Yeah, cool. So we went there in April 2013, and that was we went with it was like a conference, a paracon, if you will, and it was led by Chris Williams and Brett Griffiths and let's see, KJ McCormick. Who else was there, Carrie? Do you remember?
Was that he from Ghost Hunters? Is that?
Yeah, it's all those guys from Ghost Hunters. They were there, and they were like kind of leading this paraconference that we went to.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of us would agree that we ended up during the actual like classroom in quotation marks portion of the paracon. We ended up learning a lot about methods and, you know, things that had worked for them and not worked for them, and actually got to talk to them and work with them a little bit, actually hands on. That was pretty awesome.
That's
pretty cool. But yeah, it was you know, the experience of a lifetime, honestly, because. Carrie actually got hands-on with KJ, and they were working, what were you working, the Mel meter in the bowling alley?
Yeah, we were in the bowling alley, and it was going off, and then we had one of the lights was changing to a different color, but it was, like, impossible for this light to have changed to a different color.
Right.
I think it was a green light, but it was showing up purple, and couldn't figure out why. The millimeter kept going off, but there was nothing, you know, there's no power in the building, or, you know, not in that part of the building, so we couldn't debunk to figure out what was making this go off.
Wow, that is weird.
Yeah, and I mean, it's right there in that bowling alley, which we had another event later on that night that was pretty interesting, but
definitely.
So we ended up learning
a lot.
I want to
know about it. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm
going
to tell you. Okay, learning a lot at that conference.
Don't hold back.
Oh, I'm not. Fantastic opportunity. So that very first night, we ended up, apparently we weren't supposed to. They didn't know what they were doing because this was one of the first conferences they did, but we were only supposed to go there for, I guess, a little bit of Saturday night, and then the majority of it was going to be on Sunday night. But they pretty much let us have carte blanche on Saturday. So we went everywhere. We started off in the bowling alley, got that weird result. KJ helped us out there. Ended up going upstairs to where that suicide bathroom is. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I spent some time in there.
Yeah, kind of wrapped our way around. Ended up going up there. Didn't get a whole lot of results, but we did go into that. You know that there's like this weird room off of where this supposed suicide bathroom is. And the suicide bathroom, for people that don't know, the suicide bathroom apparently was the site of, I think it was one suicide, or was it, what, three? I can't remember exactly.
There's a bathroom on one side of the hall, and then all the way down the other side of the hall, there's another bathroom where a nurse and a doctor hung themselves. Because they were found out, they could abuse each other, so they hung themselves. And then the other, there's no suicide bathroom. But I don't know how, I think it was a girl, I don't know how she killed herself. Don't know if it was pills or she like slit her wrist or what she did. But those are the three suicides. And apparently there was a another patient who had a baby, a miscarriage, and kept her stillborn child in a jar in her closet shelf.
Yeah, we did hear about that. That was a little creepy. I think the girl, it had something to do with and Carrie, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it had something to do with the bathtub, because we all kind of took turns getting in the bathtub and, like, just sitting there for a second to see if we could generate any activity.
I think one of them was supposed to have occurred in the bathtub.
I think it was the girl, and I don't remember how she killed herself, but I think it was pills, maybe? I'm not sure.
What's really creepy is there's still a bar of soap dish.
Yeah, there were a bunch of things. We actually found, like, a really old, like, 1960s, 1970s spindle for, like, thread, and that was a little creepy. But so down the hallway from these suicide bathrooms, there is a room, and all the drywall and, you know, it's basically kind of gutted. There's all these rips in the walls. And we had some interesting results there. I mean, we were trying to do SB7 spirit box session. Didn't really get a whole lot there. Took a ton of pictures. Got, you know, some stuff that could be considered orbs. I'm always a little leery of orbs, honestly. I don't really like to call them evidence. But so that, and then got some weird readings off the Mel meter. That was night one. Later on that night, though, we ended up going down to the bowling alley. So Chuck, who's like one of the caretakers, the custodians of St. Albans, and is pretty well known, he had a possession incident there once, and he kind of tells people about it. He's a little leery of it, but we went downstairs. He had offered us to go down, and it was like us and maybe two other people, I think.
Yes.
And this after everybody else had left, and we were just kind of hanging out, and he was like, you know, you guys can go down there. You just have to take a volunteer with you. So we ended up taking this one of the volunteers with us downstairs.
Uh-huh.
You know, winding down the dark, dank, you know, foul-smelling, you know, stairs and everything to that bowling alley.
Yeah.
Black down there. You know how it is. And
there's long hallways. We kept looking at the doors. I kept looking. I always thought I'd see someone standing in the doorways as I'm walking by.
Yeah, and then they, you know, before you go in there, of course, they tell you the story about Tongue Man, so you're already on alert. And for people that haven't been there, it's this dude who apparently he got he was electroshock therapy, and they didn't put the mouth guard in right, and he bit almost all the way through his tongue, and he's supposed to be this big dude, and I don't think there's anything necessarily nefarious about him, or at least they didn't tell us anything nefarious about him. He's not supposed to – he's aggressive, but he's not supposed to, you know, hurt you or whatever. He's attracted to ladies, apparently. He's supposed to, like, run up to you with his tongue hanging halfway out of his mouth. And I'll be honest, I was not interested in seeing Tongue Man.
No, I was going to take a pass on that also.
Yeah, I was not feeling bad at all. But we're down there. And, you know, in that creepy area where Tongue Man is supposed to be, you know, hanging out, also the boiler room right down the hallway. And we set up for an EVP. There's four of us. And the volunteer that we're with starts freaking out. Like, she is shaking, and she's like, you know, something doesn't feel right down here. The last time this happened, you know, we had something really bad happen, and, you know, like, I swore I would never go down here by myself again. I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's freaking out. And so we're like, okay, well, you know, we don't want to upset you, so we'll gather up our stuff and we'll go. You know, this is an extra anyway, so we'll just go ahead. It was after about, I don't know, even 10 minutes maybe. So it was really quick. So Harry is going down the bowling alley to get one of our recorders that we had placed where, you know, where the pen pickup is. And I turn to look at her, just to glance at her to see her walking down this bowling alley. And as she's walking down the bowling alley, I see a girl standing to her left. She passes by this girl. She didn't notice at all. And it was cold. It got cold as ice in the room. You know, everybody was kind of like trying to hurry. Like, and the volunteer was like, okay, hurry, hurry, hurry. You got to get your stuff. Come on, we got to go right now. Like, she was really, like, goading us. And I see this, and I'm thinking to myself, the last thing I want to do right now is tell this girl that there is, that I just saw someone standing on the bowling alley. The last thing I want to do is tell this girl, because she's going to flip out. And so Carrie gets in front of me. We're getting ready to go up the stairs, and I squeeze her, like, her arm or whatever, and I was like, as soon as we get upstairs, I'm going to need to talk to you.
Wow.
Yeah, I go over there, and I tell her, I was like, you know, I felt it. It felt electrical, you know, the cold in the air, and then I saw this girl, and that was really before we knew that there had been a murder associated with St. Albans, but we weren't, you know, any of the particulars. They didn't go over any of that with us. That was the second night that they told us, and so when we went back to where we were staying, I wrote out basically what I had seen, like a description of the girl. Come to find out, the description that I gave of the girl matched the murder victim that's associated with St. Albans to a T, like down to her height. I got her height right and everything. So,
wow.
That's pretty.
Well, I mean,
yeah. You
watch this, in the Dead Files?
Yes.
Kyle Channel, they had the special on St. Albans. Just a few months ago, and I think Amy Allen actually, I think maybe she saw this girl, but she saw it in the bowling room area, which is on the same floor as the bowling alley.
Right.
So, I mean, that's amazing that you saw that. When you saw her, was she just staring at you? Was she doing anything? Was she just? Did she look sad? Or?
No, she was standing there looking at me. And then, you know, like, I glanced up, you know, looked at Carrie as she was walking down the bowling alley and kind of looked back down, like, didn't think anything of it, you know, for a split second, looked back up and she wasn't there anymore. But, you know, like, I knew the hair color, I knew the height, I knew what she was wearing. Like, I saw her. So,
Was she like, translucent, or did she look like a regular person?
I would say she looked like a regular person to me. She was, I mean, I saw, you know, facial features. I probably could, if I thought about it long enough, I probably could give you an eye color, you know, like she was just standing there looking at me, like looking at me, looking at her, and I was nothing.
So,
it was crazy.
So when you got home, got back to the house, your hotel room, you got the computer in it, looked her up, looked up the...
No, we didn't. Like, I mean, we just kind of sat there and we're like, what the heck is this? Like, what was going on? And I was like, I was really kind of, I don't want to say embarrassed, but I was a little, like, reticent to tell anybody that what I had just seen. I was like, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I was like, you just, when you were downstairs, you walked past somebody that wasn't really there. And so we kind of did that. I think the next morning is when we kind of started looking up a little bit. But they got into the details that night when we got back to St. Albans because it was a two-night deal. So they told us a lot more about the girl who was killed there on Sunday night. I can't remember what her name is. Carrie, do you remember what her name was?
Yeah, Gina Renee Hall.
Yep, Gina. And so we found yeah, we ended up finding out that she really liked strawberries and, you know, like the, just little tiny things about her, just kind of doing a little bit of research that evening before we got released to go crazy all over St. Albans. And so we went and bought, right before then, we went and bought strawberries and like, kind of made an offering, if you will, put them on the bowling alley and, you know, asked her to talk to us and stuff like that. We didn't really get any results from that specifically, which I was a little bummed about, but, and we did get a really great EVP out of, I think it was the Dragon Room.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, really great EVP. We were all sitting around. There was three of us in there with an EVP recorder. I was sitting, I think I had the Mel meter with me. One of us did, at least. Didn't get any results on the Mel meter, but through the course of asking questions, I asked, you know, did you, no, I think Carrie, you asked. Me? Well, yeah.
Yeah,
Sorry. Did you have any kids? And we got a yes. It was very, very clear. So that's probably the clearest EVP I think we've ever gotten.
So what was the question? When you guys asked the question, they said yes. What was the question? I didn't quite hear the question.
Did you have any kids?
Oh. Wow.
Yep.
I think we were...
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about, you know, the people, because it's right under, like, the alcoholic swing, and so we're talking about the people that
yeah.
were there, and we're asking things like, you know, did you live nearby, and just about their families and stuff, and then when we asked, did you have any kids, that's when we got the response.
Wow, that's cool. You got a second class of EVP right there. Response to your question.
Yeah, it was...
That's pretty cool.
Fantastic
you,
piece of evidence.
Did you play Johnny Cash for the... I heard that the people in the alcoholics wing liked Johnny Cash.
We didn't. No, we didn't. I wish we had known that, though. We definitely would have.
Yeah, that's what they told us. Did you see the crawler?
Okay. Funny story about that. So we didn't see the crawler per se, but what did happen is... And before I tell this story, I think I can speak for Carrie and I both when I put this out there, that we are not, I think both of us are on the same page where we both don't necessarily believe in possession. Okay? Like, we think in extreme cases that, yeah, extreme cases that can happen, but there have to be a lot of underlying consequences for, basically the stars all have to align for that to happen. I think, you know, we definitely approached it specifically. But here's the event, as we know them.
Uh-huh.
Here's what happened. I don't even remember what we were doing. I think we were trying to talk to there was like a dude that will peek out at you from a hallway or something like that on that second floor, that front entrance, which is where the bathrooms were. So we were kind of taking a break and stuff. And we're outside, and we hear this, screaming, this woman is losing her mind. And we hear, it's funny because we hear the screaming and we can hear it coming around corners and then all the way down the stairs we hear the screaming. And then out the front door we hear the screaming. And this woman runs out with this other woman kind of half holding her up. And they're just, you know, she's shrieking her head off and like shaking and stuff like that. I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, this woman is, you know, having a stroke. She's having, like, a seizure. Like, something is very wrong with her right now. And they take her out under the, you know, the lamp. And I, you know, both Carrie and I have some first aid. I was in the Army for 14 years, and I was a combat lifesaver and all that stuff. I'm fairly comfortable with, so especially, first aid kind of thing. So ran over, I'm trying to like render first aid. Carrie's trying to render first aid. I'm taking her pulse. You know, this woman is just shaking and sweating and she like stands. So she's, you know, we're having to hold her up along with a couple of other people that have come outside to see what the commotion is. And, she isn't saying anything. Her eyes are huge, and she's kind of, like, looking around at everything, but it's not, like, she's not really there, you know. So
it was really, really rapid pulse.
And then all of a sudden it kind of disappeared for a little bit, and I couldn't find it, which is, you know, like I said, I'm pretty comfortable with first aid. I've had to do first aid under a lot of pretty intense circumstances, so I feel like I would be able to find a pulse that's pretty simple. So somebody from that is working there or a volunteer or something yells out, somebody get Chuck, you know. Oh, God, here comes Chuck. So Chuck, who we like to refer to as Wilford Brimley, because that's what he looks like, Chuck runs up, and he kind of grabs the girl, and Carrie and I have been left to hold the woman. Everyone else is kind of backed off a little bit. We're trying to hold this woman up. We can't just drop her because, I mean, she would literally fall on the ground, and we're not mean, so, of course, we're going to hold her. And she's, like, writhing, you know, writhing on her feet. It's really weird.
Was Chuck she shaking, like, convulsing, or is just... Was she
convulsing and
stuff. Did it
look
like
she
was having a seizure? Or?
Yeah, she did. Or? Like, she would go rigid, and then all of a sudden she would slump, and then she would go rigid again, and she was, like, shaking. And, I mean, I didn't know what was happening. I was, like I said,
wow.
I was pretty sure she was having a seizure. So I'm like, where's Chuck? Where's 911? Somebody call 911.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
So Chuck runs over, and apparently she's possessed. That becomes the diagnosis, Ella Chuck. So Chuck has a conversation with whatever is possessing her and tells it to get back inside. After, you know, a few minutes of this, of some intense argument and conversation between him and this woman, who's not really responding but is kind of like hissing or something, that, you know, eventually she, like, slumped, and then apparently it was over, we ended up having to, like, kind of walk her around to the front and, like, put her in the office, and we never really saw her for the rest of the night. So that was pretty intense, and apparently it came out of that room where all of the rips were in the walls, and she had been standing there, and the story that we got was that she was standing there, and she saw something crawling toward her on the ground, and then she passed out. And then when she woke up, she was screaming, and they had to bring her out because she was just hysterical. So
that's the room with the locked door.
Yeah, it's a locked door that goes over, like, almost into the eaves of the roof there.
There's a locked door that the lady was telling us to keep it locked because there's something up there that is just evil. And they say, obviously, they know that a locked door won't keep it from coming downstairs, but it keeps people from going upstairs to look for it. So, and
right, well, maybe
there was an attic with no floor, too. So it's like stepping on, you know, boards.
Well, when I saw her later, I saw the lady later, and she, I guess, didn't recognize me at all, but she said, "Did you hear what happened to me?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, what happened?" And she said, "Well, we were up there, and, you know, everybody was sitting down, and I was still standing up, and she saw something crawling towards her." And she said before she blacked out, she heard it say, "They don't know my name is Steven." And then the next thing she knew, she woke up and was screaming and was outside.
Wow.
Crazy.
You know,
definitely
crazy?
A weird situation.
Add a little story to tie it up. We were in Jacob's room, the little boy that was killed. We were in that room, and we had a spirit box going. And throughout the course of the EVP session, we heard the name Steven, or Steve. The girl I was with, the spirit box said Steve. The girl was in a group, said, Steve, and then my friend Dennis, his camera caught an EVP saying Steve, and then a friend of mine, part of the group, walked by, his name was Steve, walked by the camera, his name was Steve. So, spirit box said Steve, my friend said Steve, EVP said Steve, then Steve walked by the camera.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Something else to sort of tie it together is Gina Renee Hall, the man that was convicted of her murder, his name is Stephen Epperle.
Wow.
Ooh. See? That's how history comes with science.
Was that Kevin Bacon, the sixth generation of Kevin Bacon, or separation of Kevin Bacon, like the sixth generation of Steve?
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, your expert opinion, and thank you, by the way, for serving our country. And
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. What do you think happened? Do you think it was positioned, or do you think it was something more natural than that?
I think that it was. I mean, I hate to levy judgment on somebody like this, but I honestly think that that lady was looking for some attention. And I mean, maybe there were some elements of that that were fairly truthful, but I really, like, I just can't see that. And maybe it's, you know, maybe she was, you know, a very vulnerable person, and maybe that is what happened. And maybe, you know, like, all the stars aligned and stuff like that, but. And maybe I just can't fathom that because I can't, you know, like, I don't know. And nothing like that has ever happened to me, so I really can't see that being legitimate. I can't.
It's kind of strange that they came up to her and she just automatically jumped to possession.
Right. Well, yeah, and that was what everybody just assumed. Instead of, you know, we need to call 911 because this woman is having a medical issue, you know, like, which is what Carrie and I were thinking. We were like, somebody get an ambulance. Like, what's happening right now? Why are we doing, you know, prayer? Why are we praying over this woman? Why don't we? Someone's calling 911, right? Like, you know.
So it's like if people have a seizure in a haunted location, that's automatically possession. But if you take her. You take her a block down the street to McDonald's or something, she's having a seizure. And, you know,
yeah.
It's like, oh, it's her location. Obviously, she's possessed. Okay. Fuck.
I'm just glad it all kind of worked out, because if she had been having a seizure, we would have had problems. But I don't know.
It
seemed like the staff was reacting as if that sort of thing happened on occasion, if not on a fairly regular occasion, which is a little concerning. I mean, not only, you know, if you believe in that stuff, it's a little concerning because it's like, well, you know, you're allowing people to let these things into their lives. And if you did watch the Dead Files episode of, you know, St. Albans, then Amy Allen said herself, you know, like, oh, yeah, this stuff can follow you home. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, all he did was tell it to go back inside, and went back inside, I guess.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he had some harsh words for it.
I guess my question was, is if it's possessing people, for God's sake, don't tell it to go back inside. This is going to happen next weekend. I mean,
well, at least you know where it is if it's inside. If they say, well, go away, it could be possessing people like all over Radford. You know, at least.
Yeah, really.
You know,
I mean, I guess too, but like, I don't know. My thing is, what gave Wilford Brimley the power, the dominion over this thing too? Because
Waker,
you know, like,
yes, Wilford Brimley, what power?
Yes. The diabetes gives him the power to, you know, possession.
He's healthy in the morning. He's ready to do battle.
I mean, if that's the case, though, like, he needs to stare. Like, that's something. I mean, I would like to know that before I go into that location. You know, like, listen, if he's a little funny, maybe you should start calling for Chuck, because Chuck is the only one that can handle this situation appropriately. So
Chuck
pretty
much made that ghost his bitch, pretty much.
Yeah, he did. I mean, apparently that ghost Chuck his bitch first, because apparently, like, according to Dead Files and according to Chuck's testimony on Dead Files, which he actually is interviewed, so if you watch that episode, you can see that it's Wilford Brimley's twin, literally. But,
nice.
Yeah. So on it, he was like, yeah, you know, I was walking down the stairs at St. Albans, and then all of a sudden I felt something pick me up, and it threw me down the stairs.
Oh, yeah, the guy who was thrown down the stairs, that's right.
Yeah, that's him. Like,
okay, yeah.
That's Chuck.
So, I don't, you know,
I mean, if that's the case, and now Chuck is having, like, intimate conversations with it on a fairly regular basis, then maybe we need to have an intervention for Chuck. I don't know.
Chuck is like the Chuck Norris of goddamn good height.
He is. The Chuck Norris is...
So get the fuck out. My, the guy who was with Tullock gave us a tour of the location. He said he was actually there when Chuck was thrown down the stairs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so,
I can't imagine what that looked like. I mean, that would have to be one of those top 10, you know, ghost hunter moments of all time. You know, like, I was there when a dude was physically lifted and thrown down the stairs by an unseen force. Like, if I had that on my ghost hunter resume, I don't know if I would ever be able to hunt again because I would be like, first of all, I don't, you know, I'm scared out of my wits because something could throw me down the stairs. And second of all, I don't know if there's anything that could possibly top this. Like, at what
exactly.
point?
Exactly. So, I mean, imagine if you, if you're the person who gets thrown down the stairs. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
How do you even recover from that?
Right, and now he's, like, in bed with St. Al, you know, he's doing tours for them and stuff like that, and, you know, more power to him if he's strong enough to do that, and that legitimately did happen to him, and he's helping people out, then hey, good on you. But if something throws me down the stairs, I'm not coming back. Done.
Yeah.
Done with that.
There are a lot of people who ask, like, do I ever get scared on investigations and stuff? I'm like, well, not really, because I'm all paying to do it sitting in the dark. Now, if I was to get, you know, slapped in the face or something, you know, with something physical altercation, with something I can't see, I mean, I don't know how I would react. A lot of people say, we have to stand your ground. Well, shoot. I mean, if it happens to you the first time, you know, if it happens to you, you don't know how you're going to react to it.
Right, and like,
yeah,
what,
I'll be
exactly
brave,
what
but...
standing, because you don't know where it is, so, I don't know. We, you know, we try and be, we don't do any provocation. We don't really believe in that very much. I think we both talked about it, and there would have to be a reason for us to use provocation. I don't want to say we would never, ever use it, but we would have to be extremely comfortable. We would not let just any, you know, Tom, Dick, or Harry do it. And I think it would either have to be Carrie, myself, or maybe one of the other five core members that would have to initiate it, and it would have to be a very controlled area,
yeah.
Very situation dependent.
You don't want to go overboard, too. You don't want to piss them off so much like they're throwing shit at you, you know, at the same
right,
time.
Right, I certainly don't want to be stairs or anything, so.
Yeah.
So I think going in there with a healthy attitude of respect, you know, I think everybody pretty much does at this point. Like, all the good members of the community go in there with that attitude of respect and reverence, and, you know, like, we're visitors to go. So I think that kind of mitigates the risk quite a bit.
Well, I was telling a friend of mine about when I went there. I'm like, I can't say I had fun, because I think if I said the word fun, it'd be disrespectful to the people who live there and died there and stuff, but like I said, it was more of an honor to be in the location.
Yeah, and really, I mean,
yeah,
that building itself is gorgeous. I mean, you can just feel the history there.
Actually, a little bit of tidbit information. When I was in college, I went to actually school in Rashford.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And I had a doctor who had an office St. Albans.
Oh.
It wasn't all crazy
huh.
people. It wasn't all like he had an office downstairs. And I remember when I went there, I just remember the place was really depressing when I was there. It wasn't anything like just, you know, just had any need someone to talk to, and so I had to go see him. But I remember it being really depressing when I was there. And I remember he had an office on one of the lower levels. I actually found those steps that went down to where his office was. But so yeah, that was part of the history of St. Albans for
that's
like
awesome.
For a few months. And it was yeah, you know. Well, of course, when I was there, I think you know, I'd be back in like 10, 12 years investigating it for you know ghosts and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, well, I actually went to Virginia Tech, so it was interesting to be so close to, you know, somewhere that I would consider home.
Probably the time I was in Radford.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. When were you at Radford?
Graduated in 96.
I actually went 2005 and 2007. Like, I did a while in the Army before I went to college, so.
I gotcha.
I was a bloomer, so to speak.
I gotcha. I remember the winters in Radford were really depressing, because it's all gray.
Oh, my gosh.
The sky's
gray,
definitely. Even the green trees are gray. I mean, it's just the leaves are off the trees, and pine trees are gray looking, the grass is gray looking. I mean, shit. I mean, if you don't drink, you can be depressed, because it's like,
yes.
Always cold, bitter cold.
Definitely,
so,
yep. I was in a sorority when I was Virginia Tech, and we used to have to wear skirts, you know, fairly often, at least once a week, usually more than once a week, but you used to have to wear skirts and stuff, and walking across that drill field, I was torture every winter, torture.
I mean, I would go to frat parties, and I see these girls wearing these huge mama, like, short skirts, walking across campus. I'm bundled up like I'm a freaking Eskimo.
Yeah, guilt.
So, I mean, damn.
It's definitely got cold, and I can see why, you know, being in St. Albans, you know, why there would be so much negative energy there, because, you know, that environment, it's prison to be there, and it's cold most of the year, from, like,
yep.
I guess, October through April or May, so it's warming up in end of April, early May or whatever. And then, so it's cold a lot, and you're in a depressing environment. You get, I mean, you can see why there's a bunch of negative energy in that place because of where it is.
Right. Yep.
No.
And it's, you know, it's next to, funny enough, I mean, going back to Crossed Creeks necessarily, but there's the river right there. What river? I don't remember.
The New River.
The New River.
Yeah.
The New River.
The New River
runs right by St. Albans, and I mean, there is, you know, the theory about running water will, you know, help to amplify and generate paranormal activity. So the, you know, the juxtaposition, if you will, of St. Albans with that confluence of active running water, that's got to be some sort of a generator for the activity levels at St. Albans, I would think.
Well, yeah, and exactly right. You have to admit, when you see that, that structure on top of a hill
looking down on, like, the town, it's kind of freaky.
You go across the bridge and see it. You see it, like, in the distance.
Yeah, it's definitely very
up on the
ominous hill.
You have to expect to see, like, lightning flashing around, like those old, like, 1950s horror movies, you know? Where you open the door and the lightning flashes and shit.
Yeah, it's a special place, I would say.
Yes, it is.
Like I said, we're really hoping to get back there in June. We are, you know, we have to get a minimum of 10 people right now to go, and I think we're pretty much there, but just kind of throwing it out there, if anybody's listening and they would like to go, come friend us on Facebook and let us know, because
I might go with you guys too.
Come on, we can relive college days. It'll be fun.
There we go. Good times.
Yeah, that was a really interesting place. How many people were there when you went on your group,
your paracon and all them?
The Paracon, we might have had, I would say between like 30 and 40 people. Carrie, you think that's right?
Yeah, that's right.
Like 30 and 40
people.
How many people
were split up into groups?
Well, you kind of got to go with whoever you wanted to go with. They kind of, like, the very first, they split us into fairly equal groups, but you got to, you know, like, you got to be like, all right, well, we're in a group together, so we all want to get together. You know, like, they did honor that a bit, and we got split into the equal groups, and then the Sunday, we had carte blanche. You could split into whatever groups you wanted to, and it was first come, first serve. So, like, there was a situation where we had a game plan. It was me, Carrie, and then another guy named Brandon,
He was a member of our group. And we made this game plan. We're like, okay, well, here's the top five sites. And so immediately, as soon as they release us, we're going to go straight to the Dragon Room, because we knew everybody was going to want to eventually go to the Dragon Room. And we were young and virile, and we could sprint down there. So we did. And we probably had, I don't know, five different groups that were trying to kind of, like, bump us out. But we, you know, held our ground really well, and we got that great EVP because of it. So, I'm not sorry.
Well, and then after we did the Dragon Room, we went down, traveled through a bunch of hallways, and ended up over where the morgue was.
Yep. So we got to do, I mean, we traveled around for quite a while and didn't see anybody for a while. And then finally stumbled upon, like, a little group that was doing that, the hallway where the guy kind of, like, supposedly peeks out and stuff. We met up with a bunch of people there and kind of made some friends, started kind of branching out from there. I think we all ended up with different people, so it was kind of interesting. It was kind of cool. We got to meet some new characters and definitely make some friends that were in other groups and stuff. One was an author. I think she was at Cumberland, Virginia, or something like that. She wrote about haunted areas and stuff like that. She was super awesome.
Kelly Doyle.
Kelly Doyle, that was her name. She's really cool.
So she wrote books? She's an author? And she wrote books about Cumberland, you said? Oh, cool.
I think she wrote books about pretty much everywhere, but I think she's based out of Cumberland. I'm not 100% sure, though.
Yeah, I think she's based out of either Cumberland or Culpeper, and one of the books she wrote was about during the Civil War, women that would present themselves as men so that they could enlist.
Yep.
Wow. So were the people in your groups, were they mostly from Virginia, or were they from all over, like, the country?
Well, everybody that we have is at least currently living in Virginia right now. We do have a lot of military members in the group, though, so, I mean, they're from all over the place. I know one of our core group is from Washington State. Let's see. You have Carrie and I. Manny. Is Manny local?
He's here in Richmond now, but he's originally from California by way of Florida.
Yeah, so... we have, you know, a whole cluster. So the military aspect, and, you know, when we started out, we were, I'd say, 90% military members, and then we've kind of branched out from there and gotten a few just civilians, but it's...
Originally, I was the only member that wasn't in the military.
True.
Well, okay. When you go on investigations, when you go, like, on EVP sessions and stuff, how many people do you like to have in a group? What's the most people you want to have, like, on an EVP session? Like, two or three people, or
I think my option is always three or less. But, I mean, you know, since we open the investigations up, you know, there's usually, we try and stick to the three, but... if there's more, then we try and just use it as a teaching tool and not necessarily to get evidence. So, and sometimes, you know, every once in a while when we do have those open hunts, which, you know, we do pretty often, we will go back. If we feel like there's a room that's particularly active, or, you know, we just get a feeling about a room, something like that, Carrie or I or one of the core members will take, you know, another member and go into that room and just kind of do a really quick burst session, you know, that's much more intimate. So we try and kind of play it by ear, but it would be optimal.
Yeah, I've noticed that if you have more than three people, there's just too much noise pollution. You know?
Yeah, the atmosphere. Somebody's always going to be moving. Somebody's always going to be, you know, coughing or sniffing or something. So.
And people kind of talk over each other, too, when you don't know. You know, who's going to say, who's going to ask the question next, and then, you know, it's just better to have a minimum of three people on an EVP session. Do you like primary cases, or do you prefer more of the historical locations? Where do you go?
I think we, you know, and Terry can speak for herself here, but I think we kind of more tend to go toward the historical. We have done four private homes, not counting Oak Ridge Plantation. And those are really, I'll say that those are really special, you know, because you are helping someone. Like someone has a problem and you are to help them solve this problem. So those are very special to us, but we, since we're so new, and there's, you know, so much left for us to learn, we try and gravitate more toward those historical locations where there's other evidence, there's things that we can, you know, we get an EVP, then another group might also have an EVP that we can bounce off of it. So like the Stephen thing, right? So Cross Creek had that experience with the Stephen entity, per se, and you also had a little experience with the Stephen. So now that's something that would corroborate our findings. And the more that we, being fledgling group, you know, the more that we're able to do something like that, the better, you know, our skills get, the better we're able to really do that evidence so that when we do those private homes, we do them well and, you know, we do the owners justice. Terry, what do you prefer?
Have you divulging any private information? Do you have any cool stories from any of the private cases you've done, like anything has happened that we wouldn't give anything away as far as, you know, private information?
Yeah, actually, there was one investigation that we went on, and it wasn't, there wasn't anything, I'll say that there wasn't anything cool, but when I say that there wasn't anything cool that happened, the fact that there wasn't anything cool that happened was actually the cool thing, if you're following. So we were able to take our equipment into a home where a person had complained about feeling watched, you know, like always seeing something out of the corner of their eye, hearing something, you know, getting, seeing like shadows and stuff like that. We were able to go into that home with our scientific equipment, and we were able to, within a reasonable doubt, like debunk almost every claim that they had. And it ended up being that they had a really, really high EMF that was emanating from a clock radio that they had right on their bedside, you know, right beside their head while they were sleeping, and it was mm-hmm. extremely high.
Wow.
Like
and the fuse box for the house was also in the bedroom.
Yeah, and it was also extremely
jeez.
High. The
radiating. So what were they saying they were seeing? Were they just, like, having weird feelings and stuff? Like, they felt like they're being watched and stuff like that, so... So they were sleeping in a fear cage, what you're saying.
Right, exactly. They were, you know, and they would, like, turn their head to the side, and they would kind of see something shift in the background, and they wouldn't be able to ever actually get their eyes on it, that kind of thing. You know, we went in with an open mind, obviously. We did historical research on the place, and, you know, it just turned out to be circumstances. And also, the client had just gotten surgery, and she was she had some pain meds and stuff like that. So that wasn't something, that was something that we also kind of put in there to kind of corroborate, hey, listen, you know, maybe we need to take a step back and kind of evaluate the EMF fields in your home. We need to educate you about that, about EMF poisoning, and, you know, see what happens from there. And it seems like it was a very favorable outcome. I don't think she really had any other issues. So pretty well resolved. So, yeah, so when I say cool, I mean it was cool that there wasn't anything that happened, but that we were able to debunk and help her.
But you still got to help the lady out, and that's cool,
right.
Even if you don't find anything. You know, even probably better if you don't find anything. A lot easier to say, just move this stuff around, and your problem will be done. I want to introduce my partner, Kristen. She's off of work, and she's actually on the line with us. Right now, Kristen. Hello.
Aloha.
Okay, good. So she's got off work, so she joined us a little late, but it's all good. Glad to have her on board. So when
nice to meet you, Adam.
Nice to meet you.
So when you go and do like historical research on a private location that doesn't have much information on it, if it's like a regular house, some random neighborhood. What's your process to get all the information you can on the place? Where do
I
you
usually
go?
I usually try to start present and then work my way back. So I'll see, you know, looking up just property records when the house was built, find out any information I can from that. I'll go back and look at deeds and land records, which could be something from the courthouse. I do a lot at the Virginia Historical Society, at the Library of Virginia. A lot of records are online, but then a lot of them I just have to go down and rifle through microfilm for hours on end. So I'll work my way back and see maybe, like, well, before this subdivision was there, who owned this land, what was there, what kind of things were happening, and just work my way back until I can't find anything else. I'll sort of present it all from beginning to end, and then based on maybe evidence that we'll get there or things that they're seeing, things that they've heard, we'll try to tie in, well, you know, someone has heard the name William, or we'll get the name William in an EVP. Okay, well, you know, William so-and-so lived here, you know, 112 years ago. So I think the historical part of it, like, it's really good to try to tie in, just sort of bolster up and validate things that we might find.
Okay. I think, what do you, so you've been to Ferry Plantation, you've been to Boxwood. Is there any place else in Virginia that you really want to go to besides, I guess, well, you said to tell me the Armory, but that's open air, right?
Yeah, we just need to do, with the Schwartz's Tavern and Blackstone Armory, we just have a couple of last-minute things that we really need to get accomplished. We need to get a warm fuzzy and handshake on the dates, and we're pretty much in on that one. And then St. Julian's Creek, I think, needs a little bit more background work, really, with that commander. You know, like I said, military can be a little bit skittish. I think that it helps. I hope that it helps, the fact that, you know, we're comprised, the majority of us are military, so we certainly have a little bit of care and concern when it comes to the grounds and everything like that, and trying to do things the right way. We haven't.
Well, they know they can trust you. They know.
Right, exactly. I mean, and if we do anything to mess up, they'll come after us. So.
Well, if you were to go on an investigation, like anywhere, not your dream location,
anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Well, okay, so there's this thing called the Spirit Cruise, and it's December 7th through the 14th, and it's like it's a cruise to the Caribbean, and it's led by Chip.
There we go.
Like I said, it's led by Chip Coffey, who's, you know, fabulous. So 7 days with Chip Coffey in the Caribbean, investigating old, you know, like slave plantations and things like that. I feel like you really can't go wrong. Bermuda, you know, all that would be amazing. Puerto Rico, good Lord. Castillo San Cristobal and El Yunque, Rainforest. I would kill to do, you know, places like that.
Wow, sign me up for that.
Yeah, like I said, and it's cheap too, so look it up. Spirit Cruise, boop boop.
And it's like December too, right before Christmas. It's starting to get cold.
Right.
A little vacation before you start the whole, you know, holiday rush.
Yeah, I think seven that they visit before, you know, they pull back into port, but it's like seven different, and they already have it, you know, squared away where you get to do investigations every single spot you go to, so I'm down for that.
I'm trying
to convince
that is awesome. I know Kristen kind of got on late, but I wonder if she has any questions for you, girl.
I kind of feel left out of the conversation because I missed like a whole hour and a half.
I feel
horrible. As soon as like 6 o'clock rolled around and my boss came in, he's like, "Yeah, our closer called out. Guess what?" And I was like, "No, please don't. Oh, I hate you."
No. So we've been talking about.
Well, I did do a little bit of research before on you. I did maybe stalk your Facebook page a little bit. I've yet to send out a friend request because my phone was acting up. But thank you for the service that you do for our country, or that you did do for our country, first off.
Thank you very much.
And what's your favorite piece of equipment to use out in the field?
For me personally, that's a hard one. So my little pet that I have is the Fluke, which is something that to me is, it's not something you find in every ghost hunter's kit, but I am on the crusade that it should be. So a Fluke is really an ohm meter, so it registers and reads the flow of electricity, and basically, in basic terms, like not trying to get all scientific because God knows I don't understand it either, but so say, for instance, you are doing an EVP session and, you know, your somehow your batteries that you just put in there that you know are brand new, you put them in and they go dead. So what the Fluke does for us is we are able to take that, both of the readers from the Fluke, we're able to hook that up to the battery, and we're able to actually register the amount of electrical charge left in that battery. So if we know for a fact, if we have batteries that have been kind of left out or whatever, if we have that Fluke, we know without a shadow of a doubt that that battery is 100% charged, and then we're able to take that Fluke, register that, and then when it gets drained, we're able to, again, register that it has completely lost charge, and we have that time lapse of it actually happening. That's awesome to me, and I think it's a really cool thing that we're using something that is a standard piece of an electrician's equipment, but we're using it for a paranormal cause, and I think that's awesome. Like, I want to try and do that way more in the future. That's just our baby step right now. Carrie, what's your favorite?
I like the spirit box because I feel like it's giving someone that maybe doesn't have a voice or doesn't have a voice that we can readily hear a way to quickly communicate with us. We can hear what they're trying to say. We can respond to them without having to go, okay, well, we got to stop. We got to listen to this. Okay, this is what we heard. Now we can respond.
You can actually carry on a conversation with the spirit more than you can using a digital recorder where you just stop every 5 seconds and rewind it and hear what they have to say. Yeah, I can understand that.
Right. And of course, having the digital recorder is important because then you're documenting the whole conversation, but...
And plus, you're getting voices you don't necessarily get with the spirit box too. So,
I like the spirit box. I was introduced to that like not too long ago, and the first time I'd ever seen somebody use it, it freaked me out horribly. But like the second time we used it, I was pretty okay with it. It wasn't as bad as the first encounter.
That one weird, like it'll be like that Fluke and it'll be like kill, and you're like, what's happening right now?
I think I had someone call me a fucker or something on the spirit box and in Rikers, or said maybe so. No, he said fuck him about me on the
and terrifying. Yeah. And terrifying.
So why do you think, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to, like, recount, like, the hospital in Henricus, what had happened to me, what kind of scared me away from the spirit box a little bit.
Yeah, we both heard the screams.
Yeah, like, I had heard one scream come through the spirit box, and then all of a sudden, I kept hearing the screams outside of the building.
That's weird.
We were in a hospital at Henricus, and we're sitting there, and we had spirit box going and stuff, we both heard these screams like around the building, but no one else heard them except us.
Hmm.
So we're looking around.
That's
like,
really
we're looking at our partners. They're like, "Do you hear that?" So I think that's what you got at the left, right, Kristen?
Yeah, I had to walk outside. I had to leave. I couldn't take it.
So I got up like I don't know up maybe 10 seconds after she does, she and I walked outside and looked at him like, he's heard the screams, right? She's like, yeah. So,
but we were the only people who heard him. And apparently there was a big Indian massacre that occurred there. So, you know, he knows what we're hearing.
I'm jealous right now. I would love to, I guess. It's right down the street from my mom's house, and Carrie lives pretty close to there, too, and that would be awesome. I mean, that's a, you know, a really cool area. I think both of us have had, you know, a pretty close tie to that area, just, you know, going and visiting throughout the years, that kind of thing. When we lived in Richmond, we used to go pretty regularly, so that would be really cool.
Well, keep on Facebook. I know Transcend does a lot of open investigations as far as public investigations. That Transcend Paranormal, that's their home base. That's their location. That's where they do most of their stuff. But
cool.
I do have a question about the ohm meter. I like that idea a lot because I use that with batteries when I'm helping my mom go down to the track. I check the batteries before we leave to make sure I'm taking good ones.
Right.
How often does the battery drainage ever happen when you're on investigations, or is it just like specific spots?
I would say that it's happened probably three, maybe four times on investigations. I know it happened twice at St. Albans. In fact, that was in the bowling alley when Carrie and KJ were having that really weird result on the Mel meter. It was basically what happened with the Mel meter, just to kind of recap a little bit, was one of the lights was, you know how the Mel meter is, and it has green lights on it. Well, one of the green lights was lighting up purple, which is not a thing. Like, that can't happen. So that was super weird. And during that time, I was trying to take photographs, and I was trying to turn my EVP recorders on, my digital voice recorders on, and I kept, like, my batteries just kept draining and draining and draining and draining. And that was a situation where we didn't have the fluke yet, but if we had, I would have been able to be, because, you know, KJ, his first assumption was, well, she's not using new batteries. But if I'd had that fluke and, you know, had kind of established that procedure before, then I would have been able to be like, nope, 100%, and now watch. Now it's freaking 30%. Like, I'm not even getting a real reading. So, I wish I had had that there, but after that, we actually implemented it, and it worked out really well. And honestly, I started implementing it just so that I could save money but I ended up finding so much more utility with it.
I had the battery drainage happen once at an investigation that we did. I got a really weird feeling in the room, and I think it was Dennis and it was either Ashley or it might have been Ryan that was with me. I'm not sure. But I turned around to take a picture in one of the corners, and my phone flashed, but as soon as it flashed, it died. And I never captured the picture.
Yeah, see.
I was so mad at that.
You have to wonder what could have been on that picture, what could I have captured, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was that in Powhatan? That happened?
Yeah, it was. It was in Washington's room.
I gotcha. So, do you guys ever watch any of those ghost shows on TV? I know you watch Dead Files. Do you guys watch anything else?
Oh, yeah. Carrie and I have this thing that we like to do with each other. It's kind of a competition almost. We like to try and find Zach Bagans memes on the internet and send them to each other. And
Sure.
Huh? I think I'm winning, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
I have to say, after the last one you sent me, you're definitely winning.
Oh, Zach Bagans.
So do you prefer Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures?
I think there are merits to both.
But yeah, I do too. I like all of them. I think that it's Dead Files is my favorite personally. You know, in the words of Chris Williams when we went to that Paracon. She said, you know, there's one thing about Ghost Adventures that I love, and it's that it's a, like a bunch of frat boys. It's like watching a bunch of frat boys walk, you know, run around and try and do this stuff. And I think for entertainment value, you really can't beat that. As far as like actual like evidence out of it, I don't know about that. But I will say that Zach Bagans is not that bad to look at. Sorry, I'm not sorry.
Hey, that's fine. I understand. Although I do, I mean, I watch.
I think Ghost Adventures is more fun to watch.
Yeah.
I think it's more exciting. Ghost Hunters, which is a little more slow paced, and of course
I know they have all the camera crews and everything. So with them.
Yeah.
I don't,
it just seems, you know. Right, Ghost Adventures tries to be so much more salacious, and, you know, like, they really do play up the entertainment factor, which, you know, is, I mean, for obviously all of us that have been on investigations, is not necessarily the truth. It's not, like, the way things are. I mean, there's, you know, everyone knows that there's significant portions of investigations where you just sit there in the dark talking to yourself for hours on end, but they make it look a lot more fun than it can be.
I get to cut out all the boring stuff. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, Zach Bagans is on TV, might not be the Zach Bagans you see in real life. Right. But he's not, he has calmed down. He does bring in professionals to help the evidence and stuff like that. So it's not like But, yeah, I think we're getting close to the end of our time here. I certainly enjoy our conversation with you girls.
I'm
glad you were here with us.
Thank you for having us.
Really appreciate you coming on and talking with me and Kristen for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry I got to chime in late, but it was very pleasurable talking with you.
No, it was great meeting you.
Good meeting you, too.
We'll definitely try to have you back on. Maybe if you end up going to St. Albans in a month or so, you can come back on after your trip and tell us if you've got any more cool stuff from there.
Or maybe you could come with us to St. Albans and then we could do a live...
Ooh.
Hello, cat.
What do you think, Kristen?
Oh.
I like that idea.
Fast Live from St. Albans. You can't go wrong with that.
Oh, my gosh. That would be awesome.
Hell yeah, it would. All right, well, girls, it's very nice talking to you, and we appreciate it, and we hope you had a good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome, and thank you very much. And we will talk to you soon, okay?
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, take care. All right, bye.
Okay,
have
bye.
A good night. Bye.
Oh. All right. I like them. They are nice.
They sounded pretty cool for, like, the 30
yeah,
minutes that I was on here.
They were really cool. They actually went to a place and give you a little background before I got this home. Called Oak Ridge Plantation. It's pretty much just like, you know, Bellemis, pretty much. But
wow.
They've never been investigated before. And they were saying that, you know, they think that maybe they were experienced and had to get used to them. You can recognize them. So I went ahead and I told them about, you know, our investigations and how each time we went, it just got better and better because the spirits were, more used to us, you know.
Yeah, like this past time we actually got a visual, whereas we never really had a visual before.
Exactly. You know, I don't want to say we got a visual, you know, because I want to, you know. But, yeah, I mean.
Well,
it's
the possibility of having a visual.
Yeah, yeah, well, we got what we think is a visual. Pretty sure it's a visual, but, you know, it's no guarantee.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, they were fun to talk to, and And they seem they're really nice, and they definitely, they're a new group. They're definitely going about it the right way. And
I definitely did like her idea with the Omia, and I actually have a battery tester for AA's, AAA's, and 9 volts.
Well, there you go. Maybe we should present that to Howie and see if he thinks, because you know, I know he's all about using regular items.
Yeah, and I will definitely give all the credit to her because it was her idea first.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool, but it's like what Howie wants to do with BTA, you know, sharing information. What we're doing, we're sharing information, we're helping each other out.
Yeah.
What you care about, helping each other, sharing information, it's not a competition, you know. There's no winners and losers, you know.
Mm-mm. Everybody helping everybody, it's one big happy pair community.
Exactly. So yeah, it was a fun conversation, and hopefully we'll be able to get them back on, and I had a good time.
Hopefully next time I won't have to work until the late hours of the night and make me want to throw hot steaming pizzas at my boss.
That would be nice, too. I would really
enjoy
that. If you didn't throw hot steaming pizzas at your boss, save them to me. So
you're really, really slow, and I... I asked him, I was like, hey, Pat, you think I can get out of here? He's like, oh, go ahead and start washing the make line and you know, do the dishes in the back, and then you can go. And as I'm washing dishes and cleaning the make line, he steadily keeps bringing back more stuff, and I'm like, can I go yet? He's like, oh, go ahead and finish the dishes.
All right, well, luckily the girls were easy to talk to, and they were very talkative, too, so it wasn't like... It wasn't like it was a hard conversation, you know. They were very friendly.
None of those awkward silences.
That always helps. You know, no one would answer or anything like that. But I think we're good towards the end here, so I'm going to start saying my goodbyes. And,
all right, hey.
Thank you for calling in. Really appreciate it. I know it was late, but it doesn't matter. You're doing your job, so it's all good. Really great, you know.
Awesome.
Good conversation. Right. I will talk to you in a little bit, all right?
All right, deal.
All right, everybody, take care.
Later. Good night, everybody.
All right, good night.
Bye.
Bye.